Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yo, welcome into the House of L podcast. I appreciate you clicking on this episode for sure. This is going to be a fun one. This one's been in the works for a while. As a matter of fact, I should probably apologize to Jen Shahadi about this because we did the interview probably 3-4 weeks ago. And I'm just getting around to putting this episode out. I mean, I like to work ahead so that we always have content. And I needed to play the match against Joanne, which you'll hear about momentarily. Our podcast is brought to you by Mazda of Orland Park. If you're looking for a car, they're really good people. ZoomZoomNation.com is where you can go find a car. Ask for Eric if you ever make it out there to Mazda of Orland Park. He will treat you right. And we are brought to you by the fine folks over at Homeside Financial. Our buddy David Hochberg, he helped me when it came time for me to get a loan for my condo and refinance. He was the guy that I went to. When I went to get a loan to buy my house, he was the guy that I went to. He helped me out immensely, and he can help you too. I'm not kidding you. Like, he's so good at this, and right now is a good time to refinance. If you're looking for a guy, he should be your guy. 855-56-DAVID or 56David.com. You can do the due diligence yourself. Go check him out and see what he's all about, but I'm telling you, he's the realness. Homeside Financial is an equal housing lender, NMLS number 1124061. Well, this episode is all about the Queen's Gambit. I have a friend, my colleague Joanne from DePaul, hit me up and was like, are you watching Queen's Gambit on Netflix? I'm like, I don't know. I'm not watching it. She was like, you need to watch it. And I said, why? She's like, you like chess. Just watch it. I proceeded to binge it after the recommendation. In 2 days, I watched all 7 episodes. It's a mini series that Netflix put together, and it did like record numbers for Netflix. And it's about this woman who goes through a journey learning chess from the time that she's a child. Like, there's a lot in the whole story. It's fictional, but you can clearly see they drew from some real experiences that female chess players have had. But it's a fictional story that I think is really good. It's one of the best things that I watched this fall. And it gave me a reason to act. I grew up playing chess. Not competitively, though. I meant to ask him. Maybe he knew I wasn't that good. That's why he didn't put me. My father never put me in chess competitions. It's one of those things where you end up at an uncle's house or a family reunion, and my dad would be like, you should play him. And then I'd play family members or whatever when I was a kid. And they were impressed, but competitively, he didn't put me in chess. I was into other stuff. I was playing baseball, or I was playing basketball, or I was playing football, even, or softball on the South Side. So he never really put me into chess, but we play each other, or we did. We played each other all the time. My dad taught chess. And I didn't take that seriously until I was an adult. Here he was teaching chess to high school kids, and I didn't take advantage of the fact that that guy lived in my house. I just looked at it as, oh, you know, he taught me chess, and we like to play against each other. The last time that we played was the last time that we'll ever play, because I won. My dad and I have probably played 600, 700 games of chess in my life. I've won twice. And one of those times was when I was 13. And the other time was when I was 40. I think I was 39. My mother took a picture of the board because she knew it was a big deal for me to be able to beat him. And I was like, that's it. We're done. We are done playing for eternity. So I really, it, Queen's Gambit like really did something to me because it allowed me to understand how my father's brain works a little bit. Like, my father's brilliant. He's brilliant. Scary smart. And when it came to him teaching me about chess, I struggled understanding some of the concepts because there's stuff that he sees on a chessboard that I don't see. So being able to watch the main character of Queen's Gambit, Beth Harmon, and seeing what goes on inside her mind as a viewer was really helpful because it's like, oh, this is how my dad sees the board. I'm out here reading books. Like, I'm out here working on strategy and reading books, and he's just always been able to kind of do whatever he wants. Part of the reason that I ended up with the interview with Jen Shahadi, which we're going to get to in a minute, is because I tweeted out, you know, I'm someone who covers sports. I've covered sports for my entire adult life. I'm more blown away by people who are able to play chess at that level than I am even the greatest athletes. And it started a really wonderful conversation on Twitter of people being like, yeah, you know, like I like chess too, and I don't play it as much as I want to play. Queen's Gambit got me to the point where I was playing like 5 matches a night, like against the computer, because I'm a little private. So I've been playing, trying to up my game like every night. And so my friend Joanne has been saying, like, socially, like we should play chess, like socially. I take things so seriously from a competitive standpoint that the idea that she would see my weakness and see me lose, it was hard for me to take. So I hadn't taken her up on this. But a lot of people inside of Twitter were talking about chess, and it was really great. And then somehow Jen Shahadi like found me and she followed me. And I was like, oh, well, here's someone that I can talk to about chess. And hopefully she would say yes. So I went and did some research. Like, I went and saw her TED Talks and some of the interviews that she's done in the past. And I wanted to pick her brain about what it was about this show that reached people in a different way and got people interested or re-interested in chess. Here's Jen's background. She might as well just put on her resume badass. She's written all sorts of stuff about chess. She also plays poker at a professional level, if that wasn't enough. She's the director of U.S. Chess Women and a 2-time U.S. Women's Chess Champion. You know, she's like the best of the best. She's one of those people. So I got the chance to talk with her. Like, we set it up. She was all for it. And I was so happy to get her on the podcast because I've never talked to, outside of my father, you know, who won some tournaments locally, I've never talked to someone who's played chess at this level. And her... And you'll be able to hear her dumbing herself down to talk to me. But I also think that that's why she's a great teacher. Like, she understands these difficult concepts and she makes them easy for people who don't think the way that she thinks. So I hope you enjoy this, especially if you loved Queen's Gambit. I think that you're going to love it. But even if you didn't, I hope that this inspires you to get back to your chessboard or to watch the series, which I thought was really, really fun. U.S. Women's Chess Champion, two times, Jen Shahadi, joining me here on the House of L podcast. Again, I thank you because I know that you're super busy, whether it's chess or poker or speaking or all of that. There's a lot of stuff I want to ask you. And let me start with Queen's Gambit itself, because I wanted to kind of explain like what went on. Okay. So my dad plays like locally. He was a master. He taught. He's always been like he's very like super chill, like super even keeled. I am a little bit more of my mother's child. I am aggressive, and most of my activities were in sports. So you had these outlets for your aggression, where if you're playing football and you're mad, you can go hit somebody. You do that in chess, you're disqualified. But more than that, it can sometimes backfire on you in chess. So it was fun for me to watch that series because I felt like I got a better understanding of how my dad's mind works. Not that it's going to help me beat him, because I don't think that it is. But it was great for me to get kind of a better sense of how the people that play at the highest level think. So why do you think that people like you that are playing at the highest level, how do you think it's different the way you see the game versus what I would say I'm an advanced intermediate sees the game?
Well, I think that it just becomes increasingly visual. Like, you've got this kind of painting in your head. You and we see that in the Queen's Gambit. And it's like, it's playing in your head. It's like moving. Like, the pieces are moving. And I think the better you are, the more that is both clear and very intense. Like, it's happening the entire game. It's interesting that you say that there's no aggression in chess, because actually I was once calling a tournament where the players were playing so quickly and banging the clock down because they were playing like blitz chess, but it was actually blood on the board.
Really?
Somebody actually slammed the clock so hard that we, and of course, like all the journalists there like had to get a photo of it. And one of the technical consultants, and it's kind of a sad story because the series is partly dedicated to him because he recently died. But one of the chess consultants was actually the founder of something called chess boxing, which you might have heard of.
Yes.
Which is like an alternating rounds of chess and boxing.
Yes. Yeah, I've seen that. And it's amazing to see that you put the physical with the mental and the mental with the physical with chess boxing. I've always been astounded by people that can function in both worlds. But when I was watching the show, like seeing the way they depicted her visualizations of the board, I was sitting there going, I get this, even though I don't see chess that way. Like, for me, I work, like you can see from my background, like I do a sports show in Chicago, and I can see in baseball, like I can think a pitch ahead or a couple of pitches ahead in baseball because I was a catcher, and you have some control over the game in that way. With chess, I found it more and more difficult to be able to think four or five moves ahead, and I think it's made me a lesser of a player. That being said, I enjoyed that series so much, and I wonder, how did you feel about the depiction of our hero in this series, and did it make sense to you? Granted, we're talking 40 years later when you're dealing with any of this stuff, but did the depiction of her in the chess world make sense to you?
Well, they nailed a lot of things, like the visualization of a chess player, although usually tranquilizers don't help with that. That part, the only reason I was unhappy with that, because I know it added a lot of drama and conflict into the series, which was important from a storytelling point of view. But if somebody was trying to promote chess to girls, it was so annoying. because it does kind of glamorize that drug use, especially in the first couple episodes. But then it, you know, spoiler alert, later on, they kind of show a more balanced depiction of that, about the horrors that they can inflict on you. But overall, I thought it was a really great depiction of like what a chess player's mind and culture is like. It was a bit of a fantasy,
sure,
but I think that's okay. To me, it felt implicit that there was kind of like, you know, this veneer of fantasy, and that there obviously would be more sexism and harassment to a female 100% surrounded by men. Like, she was just surrounded by so many good eggs. And hey, there are a lot of good eggs in the chess world, but to really encounter nobody rotten, that's kind of unrealistic.
When you're coming up through the ranks of tournaments throughout your life, what was the connecting thread of what you noticed from when you started to where you are right now?
The connecting thread?
Yeah, what were the things that you thought you were going to see, and then once you saw them in these tournaments, you kept seeing them no matter what level you were playing at?
Well, I think one thing that comes up in chess, no matter what level you're at, and that's why it's such a cool game, is that the underlying principles are the same no matter who you are, whether you're Beth Harmon or Magnus Carlsen, or whether you're just starting out. And one recurring thing that people get wrong in chess is they miss something horizontally, or I like to say it, chess players think sideways, not straight ahead, because they're missing like something, what we call like an in-between move. So they're missing something that's on the next move, maybe, or their opponent's reply, or maybe two moves ahead. But they're not usually missing things like 20 moves ahead. Like, that's kind of a myth. So it's more like you're looking for all your different possibilities, whether you're Magnus Carlsen or whether you're just getting into the game from the Netflix series. So you're not looking at one possibility. We call that tunnel vision. You look at one possibility and you keep looking at it. And I think that's one of the best life lessons that chess has to give, that you should be looking for all your different options more than like trying to like hyper-focus on one option and plan every potential thing that could happen.
When did you know that you were a competitor? Because it's one thing to play something. It's another to be like, I want to win. Like, when I look at you, I'm seeing someone that's doing it on a couple different levels. Chess and poker to me, like the level of competition, I find it really fascinating that you've gravitated to both of those things. So when did you know I have a competitive spirit that goes beyond just an enjoyment of the game?
Yeah, that was a little tough for me because my older brother is an incredibly good chess player, and he was an international master, very young. He became like one of the youngest national masters ever in the United States. And he was a very quick learner. So me, by contrast, it takes me a little while to get things, but then when I get them, I soar upwards quickly. But tell that to a little kid whose brother is already a master, and I was like languishing in the lower ranks, and people are like, yo, what's up? Why are you so much lower rated than your brother? So I think what I had to do psychologically was kind of remove that pressure. And then I realized, like, you know, I am very talented too. Like, the way I can visualize the board, it might be slower, but hey, if you get it, then it doesn't matter, you know, how long it took you to get there, unless you're playing blitz chess. And usually for chess players, the better you get at the slow game, eventually the fast game will get there too.
Were there other things outside of chess and poker that you were ultra competitive at?
Well, no, not really. I think of myself more as a creative person than a super competitive person. And I think that I came to chess from that. And I told you about the visual side of chess. One of the great artists that's influenced, maybe been the biggest influence in contemporary art, Marcel Duchamp. He was a chess master, and he talked about playing chess as that same thing I was talking about with Beth, seeing the pieces in the ceiling, as a visual process where you're kind of like creating new positions, you're creating new visuals with every move that you play. And, you know, I find this in poker too. To me, like, I love the math of poker, and it's like the respect for the game. I want to play the good moves. It's not as much because I want to rip my opponent's king off or something like that. And but if I do play the right moves, that's going to happen. So it's funny how you can come to it from those two different angles. You know, you can come for it. You love the game, so you want to respect it and play good moves. Then you're going to win. Or you can be like, I want to win, so I have to learn how to play well. And they both work. It's just a completely different motivation.
I've heard you in whether it was the TED Talk or in other interviews talking about how a lot of times we get the depiction of the chess world wrong. And it seems like Queen's Gambit got it right, where Beth is competing with men. So this happens more often than people would expect, even though you're the women's grandmaster. There are more co-ed tournaments at the highest levels than people would expect.
Yeah, and you know, when I played very actively, most of the tournaments I played in were mixed gender. So they have some tournaments that have both women and men, and then some that have only women. But when people hear about the women's tournaments, they kind of get upset and think that it's only women's tournament or only girls' tournaments. The reality is there's like a combination of the two. And yeah, it's one of these few fields where women and men can compete on this equal playing field, which makes it very cool. And not just women and men, all different ages, all different backgrounds. One of the coolest things when I was a kid, which I think have stayed with me my whole life, is when you play chess, and my peak years of improvement were in my teens, which is actually kind of old for a chess prodigy. Usually peak years of improvement are a little younger. So when I was coming up, I was playing against people three times my age. And I was also playing people half my age. And it's just like, we're all playing chess and we're all like on the same playing field. So I didn't really think of them as like that different than me, you know? So I wasn't like intimidated or I didn't feel like I had to beat a little kid. It just felt like chess. And I would look at their rating level and determine like how likely I might be to win. And I think that's really powerful for young people. Just that whole concept of not thinking that anybody's better than you or worse than you is something I think that chess cutting through all these different barriers can do. And one of the reasons I believe that it's such a hit, the number one Netflix original ever, I just heard this morning, is because its international appeal. One thing I noticed about this series is that there's very little words in it, like compared to most series, right? Not a lot of dialogue or conversation at all. And so much of the story is told through like music and editing and chess. So it can be really fun to watch, even if like English isn't your first language.
Did you find the chess scenes to be realistic?
Oh yeah. I mean, there are some things, of course, for dramatic appeal. Like we don't usually talk to each other in major competitions. That's kind of a no-no because it can distract the people around you. But that, of course, is just like a conceit to make it more watchable. And Garry Kasparov and Bruce Pandolfini, so Garry Kasparov, the greatest chess player of all time, many thank. Magnus Carlsen, probably the only real competitor for that title. And he's still going strong, Magnus, so he could usurp that. But anyway, Garry was their consultant for a lot of the pivotal games towards the end. And he was actually kind enough to come to my girls' chess class to talk about his work on the series. And man, he took it really seriously. Like the guy is not only the best chess player of all time, but he's a creative genius. And you can see how he took this task of, you know, scripting the chess scenes to match the book and the script of Scott Frank as a serious challenge. And, you know, it shows. You've got basically two scripts going on, like the chess script and the overall script. And they were intertwined very, very elegantly.
And I imagine that since you were talking about chess as this visual medium, that for chess players to kind of give their seal of approval, that it has to look right if you're going to put it on display on a platform as big as Netflix.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. That really helped because there's chess players, you know, there's more of us than people think, you know, especially now. The chess world has actually been booming before the Queen's Gambit, partly because of like streaming and Twitch, partly because of Magnus, Garry, the St. Louis Chess Club near you is the biggest chess club in the country and has like a lot of these amazing philanthropists who put on, you know, millions of dollars of chess tournaments. So, yeah, it's been really booming. So when the chess players found out about this, everybody was just like gaga over it. And yeah, clearly getting Gary involved was a winning move.
Do you have a favorite chess set that you own?
You know, I have a four-year-old. He's almost four. And so we have all sorts of like niche chess sets, like Super Mario Brothers chess set, Batman chess set, just to kind of get him excited about the game. So I like those. I even have like a Hello Kitty one, which is in my background right now.
So with your family playing, was there ever a thought of you not playing? Like, because, you know, sometimes when you have families that are involved in a sport or in an activity, it may push someone away from it because you're trying to not conform. Was there ever that moment, or was it always going to be you were going to play chess?
Oh, yeah, no, I thought about quitting. Like I mentioned earlier, I was a little slow, and then there weren't a lot of girls when I was turned around 11 or 12. And because I have these like creative sides to me, I was like, you know what, maybe I'll just go for like the writing and the theater. So I quit chess for a couple of years, and then I came back to it in high school. And I think a lot of it had to do also, I was bullied a lot in junior high, so it was a little uncomfortable socially. So the idea of being the only girl was like really not exciting to me. High school, I became more, you know, popular, and I just did what I loved without thinking as much about what people thought of me.
How'd you fight through the bullying?
God, I don't know. I guess there was no social media back then, but it was like something similar to that, where like they had all these books and they would write, like they would have a page for every person in the class. And most of the people's pages were like really nice. And then mine was like 90% mean stuff. And I do remember there was like one or two nice things, and I'll just never forget it. There was like one or two nice things. And I was like, wow, you know, that means something. The two people who wrote nice things.
Yeah.
I lost touch with them, but I still remember their names.
But see, that's great. Like, you're sitting there like feeling bad because you're in somebody's burn book. And, and luckily, like there's something good that helps to push you forward.
Yeah, exactly. Looking for the positive. And that's a lot what girls and women in chess and poker are like. They're very strong. Like, they tend to be really good at grasping the nice things that people, like all the positive attention and, you know, the interview requests, the kind words that people say because, you know, they're a role model. And they're good at ignoring the negative, like the harassment and the mean comments, do you belong, that kind of stuff. And I think that's great on one hand, but I also think that we have to recognize that there's all sorts of personality types and not everybody has the same support networks. You know, I come from a chess family. I had a school where there was a great chess team. So I had a lot of people to like kvetch to if like, you know, people were getting out of line. But there are people who might be more sensitive, and like one mean comment or like harassment incident could turn them off to like these male dominated fields forever. So that's why it's really important, I think, to be like vigilant about making things better, even if they're like good for the people that are there now.
How do you think you've evolved as a chess player?
Well, I think when I was a kid, I liked really fast games to play. Now I like really fast games to watch, but I prefer like the slower games. I feel like they match my kind of like brain better to, you know, have time and our times also, because everything's at such a fast pace right now that like, to me, the beauty of chess for our times is to kind of be able to slow down a little bit and just let yourself think about something for longer than 5 seconds.
So there's so much stuff that's on your resume with all of your winning and also being an author. How satisfying was it for you to share the game with people through your creative outlet of writing and speaking?
Oh, it's always, yeah, it's always a real pleasure to kind of like show people, you know, that creative side of the game. And that's why like the Queen's Gambit felt so exciting, because more people saw that. One of my favorite projects that I did was Hula Chess, which was where, similar to chess boxing, where I was like, it was like kind of a video art project where I was hula hooping and playing chess at the same time with my friend, Gabrielle Revlock, who's a professional dancer and like artist. And the thing that struck me about that was how it showed that in chess, there's like this creative side and this like circular side where you're like, you know, feminine side. And then there's also like these like, you know, angles and, you know, winning and losing, zero sum. and how like that was kind of like a merging of the two. And, you know, it struck me recently about that because obviously the main character in The Queen's Gambit, played by Anya Taylor-Joy, is getting rave reviews for her work because she looks a lot like a chess player when she plays. She really has got it down. And she credited that to her work in dancing because apparently like the dancers are just so good at picking up on those like small movements and then imitating them. And you see that like when she's playing blitz chess, it just looks like she's a grandmaster. I mean, it's insane. I've never seen anything like that. And I think that that kind of goes into like how there's this creative side of chess that people didn't really understand before as much until the show came out.
So you're working with your child who now is in this family of chess players. So do you know at this point if your child is a prodigy?
No, I don't know. I don't know. He's under four. Normally the right age to teach kids chess is like 4.5 to 6. It just depends if they're interested. You don't want to turn them off. So I think less than 4 is a little bit too early. Also, I think that for a lot of people, chess should be something that accentuates their life. For some people, they'll get great enjoyment out of being a champion. But for many, I think that chess is a networking tool and a vehicle to, you know, become your best self, to understand the flow experience. Some of these things are particularly important for young women. And I don't see it as something that everybody has to tackle, like to become the best chess player ever.
Well, one of the reasons that I got into the show was my good friend Joanne, who plays, and she's really good. We haven't played yet because I know how much better she is than I am. So I know that it's a butt whooping. So let me ask you, as someone who everyone you play for the most part, you're going to be better than, is there anything that I can gain from getting my butt kicked and playing her?
Oh yeah, definitely. If she's too much better than you, like ideally, if you played 10 games, how many games would you win out of 10?
Maybe 2. Maybe.
Okay, that's pretty good. That's good. That means it's a really good opponent. Like, you know, if you're not going to win any games out of 10, then you want to kind of find somebody where you have like a chance. But 2 out of 10 means that, like, you know, in poker, that would be like kings versus aces. You know, we get there sometime, and then you're going to feel really proud of it, and you can learn something from the ones that you lost. Because if you're winning 2 out of 10, that probably means that you have good positions at any moment in all the other games. And if you want to try to get better quickly, my biggest advice would be to try to focus on puzzles, because I think that that's usually, if you haven't done a lot of puzzles before, they're just basically like, we also call them tactics. And they're like little diagrams of positions that happen in real games or even fake games. And you have to figure out how to like checkmate in 2 or 3 moves. And it's just like training at the gym. Like if you do that and then you play against Joanne and one of those patterns comes up in your game, the chances of you finding it are like 10 times higher.
Well, I've gotten back into playing, and you're right. This the where we are as a republic and a world right now has meant more time for self-reflection. So I enjoy playing chess. So I started playing again on a couple different apps. So I'm up to playing 5 games a night over the last 2 weeks, which is perfect for me, and it fits like into my lifestyle and stuff. So what I did, though, is I said, you know, where I was never really strong was in picking a particular opening and really learning about it. So I've honestly just been playing Queen's Gambit for the last 25 games. Like, I've just been doing that. And I'm like, okay, let me focus on that and try to learn that. And then maybe I can learn something off of it. Have you settled, or I mean, I'm probably giving away your, I don't want to give away your strategy, but are there a couple of different openings that you like to use, or are you just open to whatever I'm feeling that day is going to be my open?
I have a few openings that I prefer. The Sicilian is one of my favorites, as Beth also loves in the series. Mm-hmm. I've always been an E4 player, and in the series she plays the Queen's Gambit, which is D4. But I have to tell you, you know, it's been such a success that in some of my classes that I give, you know, for girls, we're doing like Queen's Gambit themed tournaments and things like that. We have this cross-cultural program with girls from Kenya, and U.S. chess girls, and we're going to have like a tournament where everybody plays the Queen's Gambit. So I'm going to have to learn. I have to learn because I think it's really just so hot right now. And it's a good excuse to learn, you know, basically the opening that is inspiring so many people. And by the way, I think that the Queen's Gambit is also very AI approved, like artificial intelligence, AlphaZero, which was developed by Google DeepMind. Recently became like the strongest chess player in history, better than the other computer programs and certainly better than any other humans. And the way that it ended up getting so good is it played itself over and over and over again. And I believe that was the primary opening that it settled on, the Queen's Gambit. So funny, art and science colliding a little bit there.
Yeah. And that's so interesting that that would be the case. Well, where would you like to see chess be? Like, now that there's heat on chess right now, there's energy that you said was growing before Queen's Gambit came out, and now there's a lot of energy flowing out of it coming out. People are watching it. What do you hope happens because of the popularity of it?
I hope it sticks around when we start playing live tournaments again, when this lifts this time. The coronavirus like travel restrictions, when we can all get vaccinated. And I hope it kind of sticks around the popularity. And I also hope that we can get back to classrooms and education, because one thing I've noticed as the women's program director at US Chess, where I'm trying to encourage girls and women to play chess, is that, you know, it's hard for some people to access all of the great benefits of chess right now. There's like a complete world online of all these like free chess lessons, free chess programs, but it can be hard to navigate it as a child. And the children with like the very engaged parents are really just like kind of leaping ahead right now, which is great for them, but it also could create increasing inequality. So I'm very anxious for that period to end, so that, you know, we can get back in the classroom so more people can have access to the benefits of chess. Because there's a lot of great chess in the schools programs all over the country, but most of them are being done digitally now, and, you know, just not everyone can access them.
Is there any place digitally that you would give your stamp of approval to, like people that are doing and teaching the right way online, that you would say, yeah, that's a good place for someone to start to learn the basic strategies of what's going on with chess?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's lots of great resources on YouTube, which are almost all free. You just have to watch ads. St. Louis Chess Club, chess.com. Lee Chess is a totally free open source server, so that's cool. And of course, my classes at US Chess Women are great for women and girls. We just started beginners classes. For people who are more advanced, I've heard very, very good things about Chessable, because it's very much about the science of learning.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That's a little bit when you're trying to like memorize openings and memorize patterns, but maybe for you, because it sounds like you already have some experience.
All right, man, I'll check that out. I really appreciate your time, and I'm so glad that you were available to talk. Your story, like the more down the rabbit hole that I was watching you do interviews or watching you do TED Talks, I'm like, man, like she's more than chess for sure. But you're also all about chess, which is a weird combination to be able to pull off. And I'm glad that you had time to hang out with me and talk about my rekindling of my love for this game.
Wow. Well, good luck against Joanne, right, Joanne? Joanne's going down. She's going to have to come to the women's classes.
She's going
to get some more training. And then We'll just do this circle.
Yeah, that'd be fine. She's gonna totally crush me when we play. I'm less scared now to play her. I'm gonna go into it with what you were saying. Like, if I can think about it as playing a series of 10 and I scratch a win or two off of her in 10, then I'm doing something right.
And do some puzzles. Do some puzzles, whether it's LeeChess or chess.com or whatever apps you're using. They almost all have puzzles. Basically, puzzles is like a self, like, play. You're trying to, like, get higher score than you had before on checkmating, you know, a fictional opponent. So it's really useful.
All right. Well, thank you. Thanks for your time today. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. This was great. You're such a good interviewer. So it felt like totally different than all my other interviews, despite having done so many about the Queen's Gambit. So,
well, thank you. I appreciate that. That's where my focus is on interviewing. So I'm glad that I try to take my time and try to learn my subject and not make it as much about me, even though this was a lot about me and chess, but I'm truly thankful for you saying that. That's very nice of you. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
You too. You too. Reach out anytime you need chess advice, okay?
You got it. And I'll tag you once this episode goes live, okay?
Fantastic. Thanks.
And
bye.
Because my plan is I'm going to also interview Joanne.
Oh, nice. Love it. Got it.
So
that's so cool.
It'll be good. All right. Thank you.
Bye. Bye. Thanks. Good day.
So I took Jen's advice. First of all, she's awesome. I don't know if you're... If you're on the Twitter.com and you want to follow her, like, she engages with people on Twitter, especially about chess. You can find her at Jen Shahade, S-H-A-H-A-D-E. Okay? If you want to find her, that's where. I took her advice, and a couple of weeks after I did the interview, I told my friend Joanne that I was going to interview Jen, and she was really excited about that. And Joanne set it up. She's like, we can play. Now, Joanne doesn't like to play online because she's tactile. She likes to touch the pieces, but clearly we're living in an environment where being close to people is kind of dangerous at this point. So we waited until we got a day in November, that, like, really nice day in November where it was like 60 degrees. That night, Joanne invited me to her deck in her backyard, and she had the board set up. We were outside and we had a socially distanced game of chess. I wanted to bring in Joanne to talk about all of this stuff and talk about the Queen's Gambit because she's the person that got me into watching the Queen's Gambit in the first place, and talk about the game that we played, because I've been ducking Joanne for literally years, ducking her on playing this match between the two of us. It didn't go as badly as I thought it would go in my mind. And I don't think that she was taking it easy on me. So I feel somewhat excited about me being able to at least hang with her. Like, my biggest fear was this is going to be over in 10 moves and I'm going to be super embarrassed. It wasn't. I was able to drag this thing out. I was able to drag my loss out. It was fun, too, because you don't get a chance to, like, hang out with your friends these days, and she's one of my best friends. So being able to hang out with her and play chess and get over that fear after the strength that I got from Jen pushing me forward on this was pretty cool. So I wanted to talk to Joanne about chess and about our game and why she got involved and why she wanted me so badly to check out Queen's Gambit, which I did. And I enjoyed. So this is me and Joanne talking about chess. So Jen told me that I should play you, that that I was afraid to play you. We did play our game, our match, and I'm glad I did. One, because I thought it was great. Like, we got a chance to, like, hang out and do it in a socially distanced, safe way. I thought it was pretty cool on what was, like, the last nice day of the fall.
It was so nice then. It is not nice now, but we had the little heater on. We had our distance, the board between us. It was perfect.
Yeah, it worked out really well, other than me getting my ass kicked. But I was expecting that, and I actually played better than I expected to play. So
it
that's
took
good.
Years to finally play me. I'm very happy Jen convinced you to.
Yeah, I'm happy that she did too. So let me ask you some of the stuff that I was asking her about.
Okay.
When did chess become like a significant part of your life?
I learned to play when I was in third grade, so I was 8, but it became a significant part of my life when I was 9 in fourth grade. So in school, in elementary school, we had our gifted and talented program. And for what they did then was they put us all in the same classroom. So they rounded us up all from the district and they put us all in the same class together. So I had the same, you know, classmates that I did for years. And the teacher taught it that year, Mr. Doyle Satterley, he was my fourth grade teacher and was a chess master. And he integrated chess as a lesson during the day, just like English and science. So we had social studies and recess and music and chess. Like that was just a subject we studied. So we all went through this. And that's when I started competing. I started competing that year. And it didn't strike me for years as something that not everyone did. Like, that's just what we did. We played chess. We all played chess together. And we all did it as a class. My friends all did it. It was what we all did and how we did school.
What did you like about it? What drew you to it?
Well, I didn't really have a choice. I mean, it was school.
Yeah, but you were excelling at it. Like, it wasn't just that, you know, you were excelling at this thing.
It's strategic. I'm a very strategic thinker. I'm a planner, and it meshes very well with that. Though very chicken and the egg, I have wondered when I was about 5 years ago, I had this realization, this moment of something happening, and I realized that, wait a second, how I think, which is I extrapolate 3 steps ahead in every direction. Like it is exponential. Like you see those little trees of diagrams going out as how people think. And it wasn't until a few years ago that it hit me that not everyone thinks like that.
Well,
just how you think. That's just what thinking is. That I assumed that, well, that's what thought patterns are. That's what thinking is. Everyone thinks the same way. And it hit me. I mean, I really was much older than I should have been coming to this realization that most people do not think how I do. They're not as strategic. They're not as extrapolating in all directions as I am. And I do it quickly. I was actually at a board game party 1 year with a whole bunch of people I didn't know. I was kind of the new girl. So I show up and I'm like, well, I don't know any of you, but sure, I'll this game, like take turns playing different games and all evening. And one of them we played and I would sit there and I was like, okay, like, I don't know any of you. I wasn't really making conversation. I was just, you know, playing to make these decisions on cards. Like you were given a set of cards and you play a certain one. And I was always the first one down to choose. And one of them, she turns to me and goes, you're one of the most decisive people I have ever met. That once I decide something, like these are all the options, this is what I want. I'm going to go with this one. And I stick with it. Like, that's just how it's been. So a question that I've thought is, which came first? Was I already thinking like this and chess naturally fit? Or did chess teach me to think like this?
What have you come to the conclusion of?
It doesn't matter. It's how I think.
It is how you think. And it's how Jen thinks. And it's how my dad thinks. And I think that it's hysterical that people who are gifted in the way that you all are gifted don't understand that the rest of us can't see the world that way.
No. It took me much too long to put that together.
I was saying to Jen, like my father would talk to me about strategy, like me, and he would say, hey, do whatever you want. Like I'll adjust to it. And he wasn't saying it to psych me out. He was just, yeah, go. Okay. Try whatever makes you comfortable in playing the game and I'll figure it out, because that's what it's such a strange thing. It's part of the reason why in athletics, some of the greatest athletes are not great coaches, because Michael Jordan says, well, why wouldn't you just dunk from the free throw line? And the players, how am I supposed to do that? And it's like, oh, well, you just do it. Right. But if unless you've got those gifts, like that, that's a hard directive to follow.
Yeah, it's there are multiple ways of approaching things. And there are those who approach chess in that kind of in a more prescriptive manner like that. They study and they learn and there are openings and endings. And this is the pattern that things should go. This is the sequence of moves of how it should be. But your dad's reaction was, you know, move how you want. I will then extrapolate all the different options that come from the next move, what you could be thinking, what your motives are, and I will then respond accordingly, which I think is a lot of fun in playing chess or any strategy game. But it reminds me of dance, actually. There's also the same thing in dance where it's very prescriptive and you can do a choreographed dance that this can be exactly how you do it, or it can be much more lead and follow, which is reactive to whatever the next moment happens to be in the next moment, and you take it from there.
When you were competing, did you feel any kinship in watching Queen's Gambit with what Beth was going through?
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. I am not a chess prodigy in any way. I mean, I was not competing on an international level like Beth Harmon, nor did I show up my first tournament and like wipe the floor with everyone. There were a lot of statements that the Queen's Gambit made. The kinship would have been just being one of the few women to compete competitively. There weren't that many, particularly when I was competing. But what was different is that women were not treated that well. They're still not treated that well. I mean, I don't know who this meant. I'm like, this was not the experience that I had at all. It was a lot of animosity of how dare she show up and do this.
Really? I understand it. I mean, because Jen and I talked about it, and you and I have talked about chess before. I'm trying to figure out exactly how that became a part of the patriarchy. Like a game where your brilliance should just be something that is like, oh man, here's another brilliant person who's a really good strategist. It's one of those things where you can't even take like the physical aspect of it. And men being like, well, you shouldn't play football because women are this and men are this. Like with a game like chess, it still strikes me as being odd that there is that men continue to act like this in a game where they shouldn't.
But it's a game that they've always done. It's a field that they've always had the headlines in and had the winning, dominating space. It was the dominant group. Still is, and it probably will be for a very, very long time, if not for always. But working in IT for 22 years, it was a similar pattern where I don't look like a stereotypical IT person or a stereotypical chess player. I was the girl that showed up with my hair curled with a bow in it. I mean, I didn't have the pearls back then, but there's a picture of me that I was waiting between rounds, and I'm sitting on a book or sitting on these folding chairs reading a book with this floral bow in my hair, but I was by myself. Is that I was kind of separate from everyone else. It was not that same kind of camaraderie or kinship. I was the odd one out, and a lot of times still am. I apparently just get naturally attracted to fields where no one expects the girl lipstick and heels.
What drew you to the show? Because it's one, like, look, there's a show that used to be on cable that a lot of sports fans love that was about fantasy football that I didn't like. And everyone's like, well, how can you not like it? It's about sports and it's about fantasy football. And I'm like, I mean, just because it's about a subject that I care about doesn't mean that I'm going to fall in love with it. So just because it's a woman playing chess doesn't mean that you would necessarily like it. So what was it that drew you to that?
Well, it was the combination of things. It was a woman playing competitive chess. I will break it down by the text that I've received.
Okay.
Numerous. In fact, I even just got one today of, have you seen The Queen's Gambit? It reminds me so much of you.
It does.
Like, I don't know why. And people will either text me because it's competitive chess, it's a woman playing chess, the fashion of Beth Harmon, the staff, or the wit, I was told today, was one of them. Like, there's a confluence of things. But for me, it was just a really great story. Like, I've watched the whole thing through twice, and I rarely watch television twice or a movie twice. I don't return to them, but I watched it the first time and I just kind of took it all in. And the second time I went through and I looked for all the nuances and was actually quite impressed where they would explain things about chess to Beth, who was new to tournaments, so that the audience as a whole, everyone could understand it, where it wasn't a world that we were not allowed to be a part of. And that all was very accurate. Those chess sets were, I've got one of those sets in my closet, the travel plastic sets, the weighted ones. Lawrence knows that I'm very big on my weighted chess pieces. And for me, it's very tactile. Chess is how it feels. So I'm terrible at online chess, but I'm not too shabby playing in person.
Yeah, and aren't you doing, like, if we were to play a game online, which will probably be the next time that we play, you'll set the board up so that you can look at the board that way, like three-dimensionally instead of just two-dimensionally.
Yeah, I play it out. So I set up the board, and if I make a move, then I'll, you know, make the move on the board and then put it on the app. And then when the move comes in, I will actually move it on the board. So I physically play it out.
The fashion aspect of it, her style as it evolved, it reminded me a lot of you. I think that that's a pretty spot on observation by everyone, that the fashion aspect. So these are things I don't quite get, but I appreciated the way that they were showing fashion. So what was it? Like, what did you dig about it?
But it was important to the story that Beth was never trying to fit into that world. She was trying to be herself in that world and figure out who herself is. That fashion was simply a representation of it, that she could have worn, pants and blouses and sweaters the whole time and just tried to blend in, as opposed to standing up on her own and being who she is and letting that shine through. It's really hard to take that stand and stand out sometimes.
You were very verbose in recommending the show to me. You're like, look, you need to be watching this show. Why did you think, number one, I needed to watch it, and why were you recommending it to people?
It was plain good television. To be fair, I was really surprised that so many people watched it, because, I mean, I have a personal interest in watching a, you know, miniseries about chess. I wasn't sure that everyone else would be as well, but it was almost this confluence of perfect everything, perfect storm coming together to put it together and to release it during the pandemic, where we watched an evolution of a person. We watched travel throughout the world and everything that we've been restricted at the moment. So it was an escapism through a medium that people didn't feel that they ever lost. No one played chess. Well, few people play chess. It wasn't something that was lost to them, the ability to go out and play other people in chess games. For me, I'm like, I miss it. But for the majority of people watching it, it was a very neutral sport, very neutral activity in which to grapple with some of the other losses that we've had.
It's interesting to me, too, that it fits inside of formulaic movies that we've seen and celebrated that have other things. Like, this could be Rocky. It's kind of the same type of thing. It's just so layered. Where
is it? Can I tell you that I've never seen Rocky?
What? Wow. I don't know if we can be friends.
There's still a few more months in this pandemic. I'll put it on the list.
Okay, I would say you could probably stop after Rocky II.
Okay,
and I would tell you that the Creed movies are good. Like, Creed 1 is really good. You don't have to get into the whole mythos of Rocky, but Rocky 1 is actually a really good film. The rest of them are movies.
Gotcha.
Uh huh. Yeah. Yeah, but it's weird, because Beth, what I do think what it challenges in those formulas is Beth is an overdog, not an underdog. She's an overdog, and yet we still root for her.
She flips. She begins as the underdog.
Right.
And then she hits this middle ground, which is actually my favorite part of the miniseries. It's when she's playing Benny at that one of the dinky US Opens that's in this like old university seminar room, a lecture room. And that's actually my favorite scene in all of it because it actually works through how she thinks. I will make this move and then he will do this and he'll do this. And then the board resets. And then you do it again and board resets and do it again and board resets. I'm like, that's how my mind works, just very, very fast. I'm like, that's it. That's the first time I've seen it explained that way. But that's also where things change. And she becomes that overdog. She's the one to beat, but at what cost? And then it goes through the rest of the things there.
I was having a moment while watching it because I watch a lot of sci-fi and I've watched my fair share of M. Night Shyamalan movies that I was starting to think that the twins were in her mind.
Wow. Okay.
I was because they would show up like right when she needed them to show up. They would be there.
That everyone has people like that in their lives.
I agree, but while I'm watching it and considering the other part of the story with the drug use, I was sitting there going, yeah. Oh, so this is the thing, like all of this stuff, she's imagining some of this stuff going on. And I was very pleased at the end that wasn't the case. that I had taken my mind to sci-fi land. And it was okay that she was just like, these were just her friends. And at the end of it, like that building of community, I thought was really dope.
But it was important that they were there. What I liked about the twins is that they were the ones that kind of ran things. Like they had an idea how it goes, but chess was never their whole lives. They faded out pretty quickly in playing competitively. Like that was not their thing to do. It was just something kind of fun to do, which is the majority of those who play chess and who've ever played in tournaments. It's something fun and I enjoy it, but I don't play in tournaments now. A lot of people who I grew up with don't play in tournaments now. It's how it becomes a part of our lives and stays a part of our lives, but it doesn't become our lives.
Would you ever consider playing in a tournament at this point?
Sure, but I'm having a hard time getting over the concept of being in a whole bunch in a room full of a bunch of people right now. That's my hesitation, was trying to like picture past this.
I mean, I mean,
Lawrence knows that I'm high risk, so that's like a big thing for me. It's like, whoa, that's the hard stop. No, I wouldn't. But let's imagine the world after this, and I would, but I'm not too sure I'd have the same enjoyment as I did when I was a kid. So it would be different. And I don't know if I'd want to do that again. I'd rather just play my friends. I just sincerely enjoy it. I enjoy winning or losing. I mean, the games that I played before you, I lost, but there was such a great game that I had so much fun losing. It was exhilarating.
I agree. I had more fun losing than I expected. And that is the really difficult part for me, is knowing that I was going into a battle that I was going to lose. And it became, well, how are you going to lose? Like, how are you going to deal with this? Because I won't say that in athletics, I was a good loser. Like I was okay. Like I understood why I'd lost and I never let things get out of hand, but for some reason, and it was the whole impetus for doing this, I have always envied people like you or like my dad or like Jen more than athletes. Like, really? I can say that I reached enough of an athletic height that I'm satisfied with what happened. I got to get close enough to find out I wasn't good enough to go pro. And that in itself is a victory. And I'm around these guys all the time. I'm around these women. I'm not around a lot of minds like yours, other than, you know, yours. and seeing people, because I remember even being a kid when I was playing, like seeing people that can map it out that far in advance. I think that there's something so cool about that. And for me, the challenge has always been in other aspects of my life, I can do that. Like career wise, I've done that for 25 years, mapping out contingency after contingency, or this leads to this, leads to this, leads to this. And I haven't been able to harness it and concentrate long enough to do it in chess.
Why do you think that is?
I think some of it is, I think that I would love to know how many great athletes are good chess players.
Well, that's a good question.
Because there's an issue of aggression that I have that I wonder if people that are doing things physically, if there's a space for them to not do it physically, because that's my biggest thing. Like, I get aggressive and then it goes haywire.
No, but I think there is. I mean, if you look back, what is it? Is it the Packers who play Catan? Like, that was the big thing that they did, where it's still strategic, though it totally blew my mind. Dr. Paul Booth, who we work with, who were talking one day about how he gave me an article how Catan is a cooperative game. And to me, I remember my mind was blown away. To me, it's never been cooperative. I'm like, this is a strategic game that you are out to win. I'm like, what is this cooperation? So that would be a very interesting thing to see. But I think the answer probably tend towards more than you think, but it may not be chess per se.
Well, now you have a lot of the guys. There's even a league. I was watching it televised the other day and I was amazed. There's a whole baseball Fortnite league.
Don't tell my kid that.
I won't. But that plays into what one would think of an athlete. Like, you're on your own and it's aggressive and physical and maybe a little violent, like all of those things. I do wonder, that's going to be like my next thing. My next thing is I'm going to start talking to people and find out who the chess players are, like in Chicago sports.
What was really interesting that you're on your own, where I don't see team sports is like that you are very much working as a collective group. But chess, you are on your own. It is one against one.
Well, in baseball is a team sport that is really an individual game. It's really batter versus pitcher. And while there is some work that has to be done within the fielding aspect of the game, when you're hitting, it's you versus him. And that's it. And it's in football, it's 11 guys having to work as one. Sometimes in basketball, though, it can be a little one-on-one. But I like the way that you put it, because you're right. It's about you versus your opponent. And in most cases in chess, it's about you versus you. Like what you are doing, what your line of strategy is like, and how do you break the other person of what their strategy is. See what I mean about aggression? Like, see how my mind works? See how the awful way my mind works?
Not awful. I mean, ask anyone who's played me and who knows me, is that I am very competitive. I am very competitive. So to me, it's like, all right, nope. Like, what do I need to do to win? Like, this is what we're on. How do we figure it out? I wouldn't necessarily say it's aggression, but competitiveness has a very significant play in how I play and what I do.
All right, I'm going to wrap up with this.
Okay.
Do you want that story with Beth to continue, or are you satisfied that it's had a conclusion?
I think Beth's story is done. I don't think the story of women in chess is done by any means. I mean, look at the women who currently exist and are playing. Like, that's where the next story should go, and that's what people should follow. Beth Harmon is a fictional story. It was dramatized. No, I can guarantee you that no Russian man on the international stage who's going to lose in that high profile of a game will hug a girl. It was a fictional fantasy miniseries that ran its course of the narrative, and it should stop there.
Did you want that outfit that she ended the series in? Because I feel like you rocked that outfit.
Oh my God, yes. That isn't true for most of them, actually.
What was your favorite one?
I did not like the coat that had the button at the collar like that. I didn't like that. But I liked so many of them for so many reasons. I mean, anything with a full skirt makes me happy.
That's true. That's true. Well, once again, I appreciate you for kind of helping to reawaken that little chess monster that resides inside of me.
Where my mission is complete.
Yeah, now that I'm back to like playing regularly, and I appreciate you opening up your backyard so that we could play chess together, and it was cool. I'm glad that we did it, and I'm looking forward to the next time we do.
Well, you let me know when you want to play again. I'm totally game.
Yeah, I got to work on some stuff, but...
Oh, no, just play. Games are meant to be played.
Yeah, I'm ready to play. I can do it. I can do it. So
everyone who's listening here needs to convince Lawrence to play me again relatively soon.
Once the weather breaks again, I'll be out. And you serve the mulled wine.
I will do.
Thank you, Joanne.
My pleasure.
So that's my good friend Joanne, and we are gonna play again. I'm not gonna punk out. I'm gonna play her again. I will tell you, I was more encouraged from our game than I thought I was going to be. It was really great. She also, honestly, during this pandemic, like being able to go hang out in her backyard has been one of the best things about the pandemic, because she's got a backyard that is big enough for there to be social distance, but you can still hang out. The suburbs is great, man, for that type of thing. I'm a city kid, though, so I still have a lot of affection for my little postage stamp yard that I have on the south side. But her yard is banging. So we'll play again. This was a really fun episode to explore, and I got to tell you, like, it being able to trade notes with Jen and being able to talk with Joanne about something that friends of hers know, like she plays chess and she's good at it. But now, like, seeing why she's good and how good she is was a real joy. Like, I didn't see in the game that we played, in the match that we played, it was a race to see who was going to get to the other's king. And I knew I was in trouble. Like, I knew I was in trouble, and I was like, okay, if I can take advantage of this position, I might be able to put her in peril in like six moves. And when I got to my fourth move, I was like, oh, this whole time she's been setting me up, and I'm going to be mated in three moves. Got it. Trying to work through that problem was really, really rough, but it was, I'm so glad that we did it. Like, it felt like a sea of normalcy in what has been an abnormal time, and like getting a chance to meet Jen even virtually has been a delight. And her, like, she followed me like on Twitter. Like, that was crazy to be able to compare notes with her and hang out with her and talk about chess. So I appreciate that. Those two great women. And I found out that I have more friends. And I'm finding what is cool about Queen's Gambit is I'm finding out that I have more female friends that play chess than I thought. And I think that that's excellent. And I hope that it's a trend that continues. My niece and she knows the pieces. My niece is 7 now, and she knows the pieces, and we go through them, or at least we did, you know, when you could see each other. We go through them, and I think that if she wants to play chess, she'll be good at it, because she's got some of that killer instinct in her, too, which is great, except when it's not great in my case. But I'm gonna stop talking about my own game. But I hope that you enjoyed the episode, because I did. And a lot of people hit me up. If you got things that you want to say, you're a chess player and you want to talk about this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I enjoyed doing it. Here's the email. houseoflpodcast@gmail.com. I'll say it again slowly. houseoflpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks to our benefactors. They have been with us this year, and it's been a really good run with Mazda of Orland Park, ZoomZoomNation.com. I really thank them for their support of everything that I was doing, whether it was the 1 minute recaps that I was doing on Twitter or being a part of this podcast. They have been terrific partners. And thanks to David Hochberg too, and Homeside Financial for supporting what it is that we do on this here podcast. That'll do it. I know we covered a lot of ground in that episode, but I'm glad that I got a chance to do it. I got a chance to reintroduce you. Like, Joanne's been on the podcast before. Like, she'll be on again because she's a woman of many talents. But I appreciate you listening. I hope that you enjoyed Queen's Gambit. I'm going to check out Queen of Katwe too again. But thanks for your support. Go play some chess with someone. Maybe at some point I'll tell you what my tag is on chess.com. Maybe. Talk to you next time. Peace.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.